Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You are certainly Annie Warmke, and today we're going to talk about getting into agritourism, or let me get this straight, they pay you to walk with your livestock.
Nobody in the entire human race has that accent.
I just did.
And certainly not the guy who actually said that.
Yeah, but the story there was, okay, when we were first starting up Blue Rock Station, trying to figure out any way we could make some money, we decided to do llama trekking. Right. And so we had a few llamas and people would pay us and we'd halter them up and put a little pack and we'd walk into the woods and we'd have a picnic and all of that. Well, the guy at the feed store, that's what he said to me. He's like, let me get this straight. They pay you to walk with your livestock. And I was saying, well, we don't really market it that way. But
He said, I've got some cows.
Yeah, he's like, I've got a couple of cows. You think those guys from the city would pay me to walk around with my cows? And I'm like, well, yeah, you never know. So basically, in a nutshell, that's agritourism, right?
Well, it's an example of agritourism.
All right. So
walking
what is
with cattle or llamas or whatever and looking at nature.
Because we all know that if you've got a farm, it's practically impossible to make money on it. The system is kind of set up against you. So agritourism is a popular way of saying, okay, I've got this resource. How can I actually make a living from my land?
Okay, well, that's the show. We don't have to talk about
it. We're all done. Yeah.
So agritourism.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us.
Agritourism is really the marriage of tourism and agriculture in some form or fashion. And part of the value of that, which we'll talk about today, is that it gives opportunity to really educate people about agriculture and different agricultural practices, and it has a lot of different components to it that might be fun. And farmers and ranchers and even agricultural businesses are turning to this more and more to bump up their income. And it also helps to combine the essential elements of tourism and agriculture industry. It attracts members of the public to visit agriculture operations. It's designed to increase farm income. And it provides recreation, entertainment, or educational experiences to visitors. And it might be referred to as agritourism or agro-tourism.
Well, it's important we get the spelling right.
That's right. We want to be politically correct.
So what are some other examples? Like, we're walking with our llamas. What came to mind when you were saying that is that old movie City Slickers, you know, when they take the cattle and move them from one place to another.
That's right.
And they all nearly die. So that would be agritourism.
Let's
hope they don't all end in death.
No, whenever I have seen that film, it's a cute film, but I think, oh my gosh, the liability of those people being totally ignorant of everything and riding horses and chasing cows. And
all right. So let's do a little bit. Like, what's a lamer example, you know?
Less dangerous.
Right.
Well, let me say that when you bring people from the city, particularly, and you bring them to a farm or a ranch, you are creating great liability. First of all, just from the lack of signage, people can end up at somebody else's farm insisting they're in the right place. But anyway, so we'll talk about that in a minute. But here's some examples of what commonly we think of when we think about agritourism. One would be pumpkin patches. Those are really popular in the fall.
Like sitting around waiting for the great pumpkin or?
Well, I suppose that could be one of the things that you could do, but it's mainly that there are lots of pumpkins that the farmer has grown and people go out like a tree farm,
a Christmas tree,
and they're picking them and they often have food and they might have a corn maze.
Oh, we went to those like in England where you could go and look at their pigs and they had little
Well, that was a farmer's market. Yeah,
things like
yeah.
That. But like a corn maze, I guess, is another one of those examples.
Right, I just said that.
I think I got ahead of you. You're reading it.
Okay. No, I said, like, and then they might have a corn maze. And if I didn't say it, I was thinking it. And then you pick operations. So maybe it's strawberries, blueberries, raspberries. You
gotcha.
Go onto that farm and they point you in the right direction and you go pick. Petting and feeding zoos. So a lot of times people will have young goats or pygmy goats or sheep or in the spring. babies, mm-hmm. and they will have petting arrangements. I personally think that's anti-animal welfare because you wouldn't allow people to do that to your human baby, and people bring all kinds of germs. And mm-hmm. anyway, that's a whole different issue, liability. Hay rides.
Hay rides, gotcha.
So
maybe like some farm stays. You know, it's not really truly a bed and breakfast, but it's more like you're going to experience the farm.
Well, if you came to do chores and do things like that, but if you're just coming there like an Airbnb or something, that wouldn't qualify, I think, as agritourism. Right. There'd have to be something with it. So, as I said, cutting your own Christmas tree, dude ranches, well, so that might be mm-hmm. an example. But if you were at a dude ranch, you'd have horses and you'd be grooming horses and, you know, you'd do a lot of different activities. Agriculture museums, demonstration farms. So that's a lot of what we are as a demonstration farm, where we're demonstrating different sustainable practices, and people come there for different reasons to learn different things and demonstrate different things. Mm-hmm. Living history farms. So that's very popular.
So we got the idea. So what is...
Well, wait. This is the one that's super popular.
Okay.
This is the one that's popular. Winery tours and wine tasting.
Yeah.
I see this all the time where people... I don't think of a vineyard as being a farm, but I guess the USDA qualifies as that.
So what could go wrong? Driving from one place to another to drink.
Or going to one place and drinking and going somewhere else to go home. Right. But anyway, I think it's very popular. There are a lot of bus tours where people get on a 55-passenger bus and go from one winery to the next to have some sips.
Okay, so now that you've defined my idea of hell, what is the importance?
I think any of these are close to our idea.
Getting on a 55-passenger bus with other people who have been drinking sounds fun.
But, you know, I'm in the list it says rural bed and breakfast.
There you go.
But okay. I think it has to have other activities associated with it, because anybody could have a rural bed and breakfast. And then also something that's quite popular that often see as fundraisers are garden tours. Mm-hmm. People love to go and see
all
kinds
of
gardens, whether it's a, you know, CSA or it's something with mm-hmm. flowers or whatever. So,
okay. So the importance of all of this is you're not making it growing pumpkins, but you're going to make your money bringing people out, selling them other, you know, knickknacks and things associated with pumpkins. So how do you get started in all of this? I mean, what's your process?
Well, let me say there are a couple of other advantages that we didn't acknowledge. And one is that by creating more revenue with these kinds of activities, you're creating more local tax. So, for instance, they like that heads on bed tax. So if you're mm-hmm. you have people staying with you, then you get taxed if it's over a certain number of beds.
So from a macroeconomic standpoint, bringing people to your farm is more advantageous than you just selling a commodity and shipping it off
somewhere. That's correct, because people also are going to buy gasoline and groceries and maybe firewood.
Cigarettes and lottery tickets.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and they might even go to other museums. I mean, that's any other activities in the area. In fact, if you had were thinking of doing an agritourism business, you would want to acknowledge and learn more about what things there are to do in your community, so that when somebody wants to visit you or utilize your farm tour or your bed and breakfast, they could say, well, there are other things I could do while I'm there.
Sure, to make a weekend of it.
Yes. And the other thing it can do is to offer more new employment opportunities. So, for instance, in the fall, it's a seasonal job, or maybe it would be a full-time job helping do different things on the farm or managing the bed and breakfast or whatever. So the first thing that you're going to need to do if you really are interested in agritourism is you're going to want to assess what kinds of resources that you currently have. So what kinds of equipment, what kinds of activities do you do or could you do on your property, and what kind of knowledge do you have that would complement tourism? So a good example would be the llama trekking. So we did, we talked a lot about leadership, because with a llama, you have to be the boss. You have to be in charge, or the llama doesn't trust you. So we liked working particularly with girls and Girl Scouts. They would come, and they would start out very timidly because it's a big animal, and they had to create a boldness of themselves. And it happened pretty quickly, and they really loved it and enjoyed it. And then we did a lot of things with local food and healthy food, because we had a little picnic in the woods to, and then they would come back and have high tea with us. And so they learned a lot about conservation. And these were all things that people wouldn't have chosen to come and do at a sustainable living farm, but they did it because the exoticness of, if that's a word, of the llamas and the connection with the llamas. And then the other thing that we did with the llamas is we sold the wool when we would harvest the wool from them, and we had little kits of how to make felted wool. And then we also sold something called llama poo pellets that were in a cute little package, and it said nothing but the best.
Yeah, a picture of the llama saying our factory.
And, yes, and mm-hmm. Or sometimes when we ran out, we would say, we're running behind and things like that. But it made a tea, and sure. It was a great way to educate about gardening.
And it is
gardening.
A fertilizer, not a drinking tea.
Oh, yeah, and it said that, not for human consumption. But it made it was a little quart package, and it made many gallons, 50 gallons, and people loved it. And so it was a great way to talk about conservation. In fact, we used to sell enough poo to pay for our feed bill for the year. So, again, these were first of all, the llama trekking, and then we built on that with other kinds of ways to do it.
I think it points out that just because you decide, okay, I want to have a pumpkin patch or I want to have a corn maze, this is entertainment, it's show business, it's marketing, it's all of these things. So if you don't have those qualities, if you don't have those assets within yourself, or there's something unique about your property or something, you know, think long and hard, because, you know, people have certain expectations if they're going to fork over the money.
But every property has potential. Every single property. Maybe you need somebody like us to look at it and help you figure it out. Mm-hmm. But everybody's got something going that could really be fun or interesting, even if it's something where people would come and draw. Certain times you would open up and you'd have maybe tea and crumpets, and people would bring their sketch pads, and or you'd have a wild food walk, or some kind of bonfire sleepover or drumming. I mean, you can create opportunities because you have an environment that's rural.
Right. And once again, it is an event, but the internet really helps small businesses to reach that market. I mean, you become
absolutely.
Your customer base is now global instead of
24/7
just sticking
ad,
a sign out next to the interstate and hoping people are going to come to your pumpkin patch.
Right. Well, and that's a good point. And also the point about signage, because people from town expect to be widely directed. And especially with you.
That's a nice way of saying they're pretty much helpless.
Well, a lot of times, and also because you can't always depend on the internet and MapQuest kinds of things. And people get lost easily, and then they can't find their way because they don't have access to high-speed broadband.
Okay. And before we talk a little bit about how people freak out when they lose their cell signal, I want to remind you that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. And we want to remind you once again, it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. So we're changing the world. We're creating our own corn maze.
No, we're not doing corn mazes. I don't want to do anything like that. But I do think that this is a valuable activity. I think if we came from the perspective of this is a great way to help people to try to connect better with the soil and the land and critters, and really took it from that standpoint, I think we can make some big changes, especially with kids.
I think we're seeing that. I mean, we see this a lot with people who come to Blue Rock Station. People are disconnected from the world they live in. There's this sense of ennui or disconnect. And
What's ennui?
Ennui. It's that sad little feeling that you're disconnected from everything.
Okay.
A perceptible sadness. I'll define it that way. And I'll define it wrong.
I had no idea you know so much about French.
I went to Ohio University. So anyway, there is this disconnect. And this helps people maybe connect a little bit locally. I mean, there can be a hundred thousands of these things.
Probably is.
Yeah, and within easy driving distance. So now mm-hmm. you just need to search them out and help your local economy.
Yeah, I think that's true. But the other thing is, it's not so easy just to say, okay, I want to do a llama trek or a corn maze or a pumpkin patch, because the government has a lot to say about these things in terms of liability.
As always.
Yeah, well, but the part of the role of government is to provide safety for people, and it's done a poor job of it in the past.
And so. To harsh my mellow, baby.
Okay, baby. So anyway, so there are some, first of all, I would say if you really want to do this, you should put together what your assets are, maybe bring in somebody to help you kind of massage a little bit what you're thinking and how it might work, and a little bit about the marketing of it, like you mentioned. But then the next piece would be, what are the local zoning requirements? What's the health department got to say about a number of issues? One is how you maybe have animals, how you treat the waste, how you treat, what are people going to do when they come there to use the toilet or not use
human
the toilet?
Waste issues.
Yes, that's right. Animal waste, human waste. And also, if you're going to serve food, there are rules around food service. And do not bring up anything about food service, because I don't want the health department calling me up and saying I did something wrong.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I'm saying there are a lot of rules in every municipality, every district, every state, every township has some rules.
And some of them make sense.
And if you want to break the rules, you have to know what they are first.
No, so, we don't recommend you breaking the rules.
No, we're not telling you to do it, but I'm just saying if you decide to do it, you should at least know what you're breaking. So if they come calling, you know what to do about it. I would say, in defense of the small business person, that it's very important to know what these rules are and to do your best to comply, because most of the people who are working in these different segments of the government do want you to do well, because it reflects well on them. And so, but I do recommend that if you have to have inspections at the beginning, that everything is written out exactly what they're going to inspect and what they're allowed to do and where they're allowed to go, so that you don't end up having all these other parts of your life disrupted because they see something they don't like, and it has nothing to do with why you've asked them to be there. So this, to me, has been very good advice that I've used a lot in our business.
Right. It's always good to, and maybe your first step would be to go down to your local health department or your business regulatory department and just say, hey, I'm thinking about this. What do I need to consider? And I know,
that's
for instance,
what we did.
Our thing was, around commercial kitchens, and they're saying, as long as you're serving, prepackaged food, because the food was not the big deal for us, or if you're limiting it to a certain number a year, then you don't fall within those restrictions. Mm-hmm. So you just need to know what that is.
It's so many meals a week. But here is the problem, is they required 3 sinks, and the third one had to have chlorine bleach in it, which we would never do in 5 trillion years of business.
Well, I promised I wasn't going to get into this, but I'll have
to. No.
All right, there you go.
But we don't fall under their rules because we don't serve enough meals.
Mm-hmm.
And we are totally legal, but we had to be able, the one thing that we had to do in order to be legal, because you have to know the rules, is we needed a little sign that said we were not required to comply. We weren't required to have a license under Ohio Revised Code. The reason I say that is because if we hadn't had that sign, we could have been fine.
So this gets into the thing of, we had to post a sign that we were not, did not fall under the rule that the sign said we didn't fall under. But if we didn't post the sign, then
we'd be
in
trouble
for the rule
that
didn't
apply
to us.
That's right.
All right, there you go.
But this is fine to talk about this part. It's all the other parts I don't want you to go into. Anyway, so then also your neighbors. Because I'll give an example. In our situation, where we live in the middle of nowhere, and down in the holler, somebody decided they were going to have mud running, and they would play music at a decibel that would be deafening, even where we were. And we used to really be upset about it, but there was nothing we could do. And then somebody had an accident, and now they're not doing it anymore.
So that brings up liability issues. So,
well, all right, but wait, because it's really important to go.
Okay, I'm going to keep you on task here.
I'm on task. Neighbors, what do they? What would they think of what you're going to do? Would they be a good asset and help you promote what you're doing? Would they maybe have a field where people could park if you were having a big event? Also, places you do business locally, letting them know, but also asking them what they think and would they be prepared to handle. For example, we have a little gas station that's 2 miles before you come up the hill to our farm. Could we call you ahead of time and let you know a big bus is coming so everybody could exit the bus and use the toilet facilities because people freak out at composting toilets?
Right, and in exchange, they're going to buy
They are always prepared. We let them know ahead of time because they buy every candy bar. It's so bizarre.
Right.
Anyway, c'est la vie. So, and then also your own toilets, what you're going to need to do. So in the beginning, we rented a toilet until we could figure out what our exact needs were. And so there are definite requirements for that. And also what kind of mobility will people have that are visiting you, that if they can use the what you have available or if you have to modify it. And all that falls back on government rules. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to know what those rules are.
And these rules apply typically regardless of what business you're getting into. Just that they also apply to agribusiness.
Right. And there's lots and lots of things online. And again, it's not one size fits all because every district, every township, every state has different requirements and different things they look at, and they change over time.
And we do that just to make it easy.
Right. But you can go online and look up your state's revised code, it's called. So Iowa revised code or California revised code. And you can look up these different topics and you can see what is required.
Well, one of the issues, bringing us back to the liability issue, because I want to focus on that a little bit. That was a big deal when we were trying to do the llama trekking, because no insurance company seemed prepared to insure against the tremendous risks involved in walking with a llama, you know, which is bizarre since they're fairly gentle creatures. So.
Well, it's lack of knowledge, but the other thing they worry about, dogs. So we had dogs, and anybody who keep a dog that's going to bite, well, that's, you know, crazy. But I think, again, is looking at everything as if you are the visitor. So maybe you have some old equipment around that if kids got away and they were climbing on it, they would be injured. So it isn't just about animals, but definitely that's a big to-do.
Well, you were telling me that some of the laws have changed where there's an assumption of risk. There's an assumption of, you know, I don't know, realistic risks, like you're expected to be able to walk from a parking lot to a building. You know, unless there's some unusual hazard, there is an assumption that life carries inherent risks. Is that not the case?
Well, I guess that's who's interpreting it. But there are
once the lawyers get involved,
that's right. Then the litigation doesn't matter. There's
well, that's money. And that's what liability insurance really is. It's insurance to pay for the lawyers.
Well, that's true because they're the ones that are going to get all of it if whomever wins. But the other piece of this is that there are some states who recognize in the favor of the farmer ranch that there is a certain amount of this going to happen, liability, and they don't hold them responsible. So it's not a matter of do you have liability insurance? It's a matter of it's not a liability.
Yeah, a good example might be when people come out to the country, they might get stung by a bee. You know,
right,
well, it's not the farm owner's problem unless they happen to be keeping beehives in the middle of their parking lot. Then obviously there's some dumb thing they did that increased the risk. But if it's just nature being nature.
I'm not sure if that's true either. I think that the laws, as I have seen them, seem very loosey-goosey in their explanation of what that means. So my guess is it would come down to litigation and what the courts have to say about it. And I don't think anybody has forced that just yet. But anyway, online you can go. There's a site called Agritourism Reading Room. And you can go there and read all about agritourism and what's involved. So let's talk about animal welfare.
Okay, let's.
Because I mentioned that briefly. The law says that animals used strictly for agricultural purposes are exempt from regulation under the Animal Welfare Act, AWA, it's called. And it is the AWA is applicable when animals are exhibited, even if the animals are farm animals. And
So basically you're saying that you can be cruel to your animal as long as it's producing food?
I believe that's true. And I remember once at the state fair, they had these incredible milk cows that were lined up in a portable pen. Each one had its own pen. And they were standing in the middle of it, and they were in labor. I actually thought I was going to get hysterical. And they're going to birth right there. And I just said to the vet that was standing there, the veterinarian, how is this, you know, animal welfare? And they said, oh, this man that's farmer that puts these cows here, he's done this every year for 20 years because he wants people to understand what a milk cow does in its life. And then they took the calves as soon as they're born away. And I was like, how is this animal welfare? But it's because it's an exhibit, and so they're exempt from the rules.
Okay.
So if you want to use animals in agritourism, apparently you're exempt from animal welfare
laws. I didn't
think
agritourism was actually considered agriculture.
Well, there's a farm there, okay. Or a ranch, or else you wouldn't be doing
that. Well, whether you're exempt or not, don't be cruel to your animals. Be nice to them.
Well, I think one thing it does talk about in some of the literature is that an agritourism operator who uses animals for exhibition purposes should be aware of the fact that they might need to apply in some way to the American, the Animal Welfare Act, whatever that is, to see what's involved so they don't put themselves in a litigation.
Well, I'm hoping that people will just behave kindly anyway.
Okay, well, then that's your first problem.
That's why I'm not a farmer.
That is so true. You also have no empathy for the poor critters, but you wouldn't be mean on purpose.
Right.
You just yell at them and say they're sociopaths.
Well, they are. Just the goats.
No, you say that about the cats, too. Yeah. So.
Okay, well, cats and goats, I don't know. They're in league with each other. So.
No.
All right. Well,
not.
You've got 30 seconds.
Okay. You know. So let's just say that if you want to go into agritourism, first of all, you better like people a lot because they can be very silly.
Annoying.
Annoying. Okay. I was going to say ignorant. But and so good customer service. And you can take a class on customer service just to see, and you can do marketing. But you've got to have a lot of skill sets to do this. Fortunately, the internet's there and people are looking all the time for things to do. And so it's a great way to add income to your farm and also educate about life in agriculture.
But it's not necessarily an easy way.
No, there's nothing easy about it.
Okay, well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our Emmy-winning producer, Adam Rich, in there eating apple cobbler. And thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother probably told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
Play nice with others, Jay. Clean up your own mess. And don't go into customer service-related work.
Okay. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed. Come out, see the morning glory, blossom in the night. Know the sky's dancing in twilight. Soon we'll be together, all will be revealed. Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.